Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean, the weekend edition. First with yesterday's news, I am Glenn ZB. We're looking back at both Saturday and Sunday, which is why it's the weekend edition. I guess it's an election edition as well, although we will have a bit of other stuff in there too. So, we need to talk the election, of course. Losers, winners. Joseph Parker was a winner. We'll talk to him as well. Al Brown, he's been winning at cooking for a while. But before any of that, Jack Tame had a strange sort of a show Saturday morning because he wanted to talk about the election, but for some reason you're not allowed to, so he's got to keep it vague. He went to a musical about Kate Sheppard.
Of course, polls have already been open for a while now. Early voting figures this year have set records. More than a million people have already cast ballots. I've voted. Helen has voted. My brother, who is living in the south of China and going to university in a city of 4 million people that I'd never heard of until a month ago, has already cast his vote. And it's easy to take this stuff for granted, but the thing I like about Election Day is, you know, that warm, fuzzy kind of communal sense that so many of us share today? It doesn't actually matter who we are casting votes for. There is no other date, no other occasion when all of us are so engaged in a communal activity. There are, of course, pretty strict rules around Election Day broadcasting, what we can and can't say on the radio. You will have seen all the election signs are down. There should be no posting on social media until the polls close tonight. And I really don't want to be hauled off in chains, so we're going to leave the election alone for most of this morning, except to say that if you haven't voted, if you can't be bothered, come on. Please, get off your butt. Chuck on some headphones if you like. Keep listening to us as we take you through the morning. Walk down to your local voting station and cast a ballot. You owe it to that bloody woman.
Well, that's quite enough swearing for one weekend, and especially from Jack Tame. We don't like those words coming out of his mouth, do we? But yeah, it was a low turnout, apparently, which we were all surprised about, given that we'd seen queues at all the polling booths everywhere, so I don't know what that's about. Anyway, they certainly didn't turn out for the Maori Party. They were the big losers, and I think it was personified by Te Uruaroa Flavel. Here he is with Andrew Dickens the next day.
Tears have been shed.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Bit of disappointment, bit of sadness, but on the other side of huge amount of pride for what we've done in the last 12 years, but you know, elections are hard fought for, and I think we worked our backsides off, my bottom and myself, Tuddy and Pete, when we were in together. So just to see it all hang there and say, well, it's over now.
Yeah. For now, well, here's the thing, to Uruaroa, here's the thing, people like you, and they are sad for you, but what is even more sadder is your entire party is gone. So what is the future?
That's right. Well, on that side, we're going to take stock, I think. Certainly, I won't be standing again. I'll be standing aside as leader. In this campaign, we've brought through some young, awesome people that I think are going to be hugely dynamic and still hold that belief of a strong, independent Māori voice with influence in Parliament that hangs on the notion of tino rangatiratanga, the ability for us to make decisions for ourselves. And I'm confident that we will have that sort of leadership come through that will take the party on into the future. That's the best. I think it's actually going to be quite good for us, because I think in the long run it allows us to reflect on what happens and allow the country to reflect actually on what they had and what they haven't now.
I've got to say, it was a slightly surprising reaction from many of the Māori Party. It was really like they didn't see it coming. And all these parties, they always talk about their internal polling that they're doing themselves. I mean, there was the poll, there were a lot of polls around. They just seem to be trucking on regardless and ignoring all of that. It's very strange. Of course, so National sort of won, although as usual, it depends on what Winston wants to do. John Key was pretty happy with how his legacy was going to be continued.
John, you must be over the moon. You must be delighted at this result tonight.
Yeah, Larry, I mean, fantastic result. I think if you thought 9 years ago, what would we be delivering as a party, you know, after 9 years in government looking for a fourth term, no one probably would ever believe, you know, basically 46%. And I think you've got to say Bill and Stephen really nailed it in terms of the campaign. I mean, they had a, you know, very competitive contender in Jacinda Ardern, and she campaigned well and she delivered good results for Labor. But I think, yeah, the National team's deserves credit, and we'll be very happy.
And Sir John, it wasn't looking flash at one point, was it? But then they seemed to bounce back in the last 3 weeks.
Well, I think Bill showed real grit and determination. You know, you think about that statement he made in one of the debates. You know, I got up again after 2002. I was in that caucus when he was the leader after that result. And that was really a difficult and challenging time for him, for any person it would be. And he just sort of showed, I think, the mental strength and fortitude that he's got as a leader. And I think New Zealanders saw that. And I think eventually, too, elections are always won and lost on the economy. And, you know, the economy's been delivering. I think a lot of Kiwis at the end just said, is this time for change? And the view was no.
Yep, so Sir John Key there talking to us late at night on Saturday. Yes, I was here then, still here now. It's like the Hotel California. Never leave. Shall we just leave that election stuff there for now? I'm sure there'll be plenty more over the coming days. And we'll talk about some other big hits from the weekend. Joseph Parker. The whole thing is just a bit weird, isn't it? Here's Bob Jones. I'd rather listen to him than Joseph Parker.
Got to say, Bob, honestly, I think every person in the world at the moment has suddenly become a fight critic. I'm reading through social at the moment. They seem to know everything about it now, Bob.
Well, that's a consequence of computers, isn't it? You can freely express an opinion. Oh. What do they call it? Social media.
Yeah, that one.
There's good things about that, I suppose, Tony, as long as you don't read those opinions, because half the time you wish you were blind. And anyway, there you go. But it was intriguing affair. It was always going to be difficult for style reasons. I mean, we all sat there at the end. I didn't think he'd get the verdict. I'm not saying he didn't deserve to, but equally, I wouldn't have been surprised. It could have gone either way. It was so I was pleasantly surprised, especially when they announced one was a draw, because I was hoping he might get a draw. I certainly didn't expect him to get the verdict. So it was all above board and clean and so on and conducted in good style. But very, very difficult opponent. You know, I've got enormous regard for Peter Fury. I think he's a very clever man. You see, if I can take you back a couple of years, three mm-hmm. years, when Tyson Fury outwitted Klitschko in Germany, and Tyson's such a giant of a man, you know, etc., and everybody assumed that Klitschko had lost it, that it had all fallen apart. Well, early this year, he showed he'd far from lost it with his fight against Joshua. And what it was all about is Peter Fury, he's a very clever man. He looked at the most successful heavyweight of all time, and he emulated him, and that was Cassius Clay stroke Ali in the 60s. And Tyson Fury would have beaten Clay because he was so much bigger and did what he did then just as well. Now, he's got Huey doing the same. Huey hasn't got the power, of course, that Tyson had. He's sort of almost, you could almost call him frail. But very, very difficult. They make anyone look bad. I mean, he made Klitschko look terrible. And so Joseph, I felt for Joseph, the frustration, you could see it on his face. I don't think they expected to get the verdict if you looked at the body language. We all just sat there wondering what the outcome would be, and it may well be that David Higgins fuss and carry on help.
Yeah, because that's how you want a boxing match to be decided, isn't it? By how much fuss a promoter makes in the week leading up to the fight. Great sport. Okay, we're going to finish up here with Al Brown. He's got a cookbook out. It's hard to keep up. Is he opening a restaurant? Has he got a TV show? Got a book out? It's just a cyclical. He's always there doing something, isn't he?
You are a man with a lot of things on the go at once. You're spinning a lot of plates.
Yeah, I guess that's right. But I've got a lot of really good people around me, a very supportive family and that sort of thing. And, you know, we're a small little business and you know, I'm kind of like a racehorse. It has to run every weekend, try and pick up a third or something to keep the business turning over. But I think the more that you sort of achieve and get done, more you think you can do. So my biggest problem is saying no. So I love the challenge, love plotting and scheming you know, if someone comes along with a good idea, it's worth a crack.
Is that a love of food that drives that, or is that a love of the business world?
I think it's definitely the food and the people, and you know, I simply adore this country, and I think it's you know, where we live and what we have on offer, and being part of the hospitality industry from, you know, relatively early age. from my 20s right through to now, and to have seen what's happened in this country over that period of time and to be involved, you know, it's extraordinary. I think a lot of people arrive in this country, you know, Lord of the Rings, mountains, beaches and lakes, but when they're leaving, they're talking about, you know, food and wine quite a bit as well. And I think that's a lovely surprise for them.
Yeah, although in saying that, I mean, if they did come for Lord of the Rings, they are expecting, I reckon, food and drink, because the hobbits are definitely into food and drink. So, I mean, obviously, probably they don't get that much elf bread, which I don't know if that looks that... I mean, it's sustaining. I don't know if it's tasty. Anyway, I think I've got off topic again. So we'll leave it there. I am Glenn ZB. That has been News Talk ZB, our election-y style weekend edition. I'll see you back here again for more tomorrow. I'm hungry now. Again, at the end of the podcast, always hungry.